Welcome to the Wheel With It podcast with your host, Devin. At Wheel With It, we are dedicated to exploring DEI issues in a fair, balanced, and fun way. Let's get into the episode.
Hello, hello. Welcome to another episode of Wheel With It. Today, we have Chris Angel on the podcast with us. They have a lot of things to say about being disabled and transgender, so I won't give too much away here. Here is my conversation with Chris Angel. I think you're really going to love this one.
Hello, hello. Welcome to another episode of Real With It. Today we have Chris Angel with us. How are you, Chris?
Doing okay so far. How about yourself?
Good. Tell us about yourself and then we'll go from there.
Sure. My first name is Chris Angel, mostly just because there's a million Chrises in the world, so trying to stand out a little bit. And my pronouns are they, them. I'm originally from Los Angeles, California, but I live in Denver, Colorado these days. And I'm an LGBTQ plus speaker, trainer, and consultant with a social work background and also a background in tech. And just really excited to be here with you today and chat.
I am excited to have you. And so you also have a disability, is that correct?
Yeah, I would say I have a few. And it's newer for me to even disclose that just because I guess I had normalized things like depression, anxiety, stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, as I've been learning more about the community and learning more about myself, especially within the past couple of years, now it's something that I tend to share. And because I think it's really important to normalize it.
So how did you come to discover that you were neuroqueer? Are you non-binary? Is that correct?
Yeah, I'm non-binary in terms of gender and queer in terms of everything else broadly. And happy to get into that as well. But yeah, neuroqueer for me, just starting there, to me, it's a really important intersection to chat through because over the years, as I've been piecing together my LGBTQ plus identity, there was still something missing for me and I didn't know what that was. And it took the pandemic actually happening for me to figure out that I'm also neurodivergent. Basically, I had signed up for TikTok and got diagnosed very quickly by way of TikTok. They tumbled me awkwardly into the ADHD videos. And I was like, this is interesting. Why is this so relatable? And then pretty soon after that, also stumbled awkwardly into the ADHD autism combo. And again, was like, why is this relatable? And so what's been important is that my neurodivergence and my queerness broadly are very linked. So an example of that is I now can more easily explain my gender because what's most important is that in particular is seen through the lens of my autism because how I experience my gender the most is through sensory experiences. For example, when I was younger, my dad and my grandma, who I grew up with, would have told you that I navigated toward boys' clothing. It wasn't really about that, though. And that's also what I would have said. I also now, present day, don't think clothing has a gender, but there we are. And so now I understand that I wore or wear, quote unquote, boys' or men's clothing because it's just a better sensory experience. The fits are more comfortable on my body. The colors tend to be easier on my eyes. It's more about a sensory experience and less of me trying to be like more masculine or less feminine or anything like that. And so that's really important to name. So wrapping that all together in a nutshell, that just means like present day, where I feel the most comfortable is with folks also at the intersection of being neurodivergent and queer. And that's when I feel like I can be most myself and not have to compartmentalize who I am or feel like I'm too much in a space. So I love being in those spaces the most. And it gets harder and harder to be in spaces that aren't at that intersection, or at least when I'm in like amongst people within one of those groups? It's just getting harder and harder.
So, first of all, hopefully you got your diagnosis confirmed by a doctor and you didn't go by TikTok.
So with my ADHD, it felt important to get an official diagnosis because I wanted to get access to medicine to help me because, especially as an entrepreneur, doing things like admin tasks, like right now, I keep telling people I'm in contract and invoice hell because I'm an LGBTQ plus trainer, speaker, and consultant, and Pride Month is just around the corner at the time of us recording this. And I have a lot of people coming at me last minute and like staying on top of those kinds of tasks, negotiating contracts, et cetera. It can be a lot and there's a lot of details. So although medicine isn't a save-all, it just makes it a lot easier for me to function. And so I really appreciate having that kind of support. As it pertains to my autism, I will not be seeking a diagnosis because I am of the belief that self-diagnosis is valid. I'm sure there's people that are going to disagree with me on that, but there's a lot of reasons why. And so there's also from the autistic community directly, there's a lot of folks that are team self-diagnosis. And part of that is just because of how ableist our society is and our systems.
Oh my God, and, it's so hard to get an autism diagnosis. And I'm not saying we should go in and diagnose anybody with autism, but it's so hard. And so financially burdensome because of all the testing you have to do.
Well, and it's not built for people like me. It's built for young white cishet guys who are white and come from better socioeconomic status. It's not created for people like me who are queer and non-binary. So even the quote unquote testing that's done is very problematic. But again, there's nothing that's going to serve me in getting a quote unquote formal diagnosis from somebody, because for example, if I try to emigrate to another country, there's plenty of them that will say, oh, you're considered a burden on society, so we don't want you here. Or in the US, I could be placed under conservatorship if it's believed that I can't take care of myself. Or just even like when I choose to share that I'm autistic with people, like the how it lands versus sharing that I'm ADHD or queer or non-binary, it just hits different. There's a lot of folks that aren't accepting, and I can think of so many people that gave pretty bad reactions when I shared it with them and when I disclosed with them, and including folks that have people in their lives, in their immediate lives, either in their family or something that are also autistic, but because they have, let's say, a kid who's autistic, they think suddenly they're the expert and they'll say stuff like, I would have known. And I'm like, but you wouldn't have, because there's this thing called masking. And that's what I've been doing up until this point. It's really complicated. And if someone feels that they need to get a diagnosis for any reason, that's fine. However, as an adult, I just don't see any reason to go through all of that trouble, because like you were starting to mention, it's a huge time suck. It's also very expensive. And again, it wasn't made for me the way that they're currently testing. And honestly, as an adult, the only adults who really get support for autism are the parents of the kids who are autistic. There's really no support for adults who are autistic. Maybe there's like a support group or something I could join, but there's nothing else. Maybe if I needed accommodations, but I'm not working like a traditional 9-to-5. And even then, I don't want to disclose because places can be very discriminatory. So even me sharing this now is kind of nerve-wracking. Yeah.
They know we can. I don't understand. It's just the wheelchair. Come on. But yeah. So how could they more cater the testing towards you being all of your identity?
I think that's very complicated. I think that historically, when you look at it, it's been considered a boy's problem, and that there's also issues in terms of saying if someone's high functioning versus low functioning, because that doesn't exist. And I know for some folks, that's maybe a way of describing their experience, and I don't want to take that away from them. However, I think that's why it's important when we're looking at anything like autism, ADHD, even queerness. I think all of it can be put on a spectrum. And I don't mean one that's like linear where there's only one point over here and then one point all the way over on the other side, but rather almost a pie. And there's just different gradients for different kinds of skills or experiences. So for example, I am someone who could fly more so under the radar. It's getting harder and harder for me to mask. And I also don't want to. But again, when I'm masking, then I'm not being myself. And I think it's complicated too, because there's cultural things, right? So when we think about even things like active listening, and this is my social work background coming through, my bachelor's and master's in social work, like that's complicated because when I'm talking, it's really hard for me to make eye contact with somebody.
I need to look away
so I can focus and not get distracted, because otherwise I'm going to be tracking you. I'm going to wonder, are you with me? How are you responding to things? And then it'll throw me off. But when you're talking, I can make eye contact more easily. So it's just more important for us to be able to articulate. For example, if I'm in a heated conversation with someone, we're working through something that I consider to be like a crunchy topic, like maybe I need a minute to process, or maybe I need a minute to go into another room so that I can bring myself back down from an emotional charge enough to be able to listen to someone that I'm in, again, an intense conversation with or something. And I think those kinds of things are more important versus, I don't know, like a BuzzFeed style quiz of how autistic are you? That's just not,
Oh my gosh, the eye contact thing is so relatable for me, because I don't think y'all mind me saying this on the podcast, but every time my dad like talks to me, like I look away and he thinks it's so rude. I'm not trying to. I'm sorry.
And that's the thing, is like in the context of what? Because each culture is going to be different, right? Even if you look at like the animal kingdom, staring and making intense eye contact is seen as a threat. So that's why you have to be really careful when making eye contact with different kinds of animals, especially certain kinds of species, because it could be showing that you want to engage in a fight. And so that's why even in eye contact, like how much is too much, how little is too little. It's all complicated and it's going to be different for everybody in every different culture. So that's why instead it's been reminding me that rather than allow people to make assumptions about me, you know, ideally people would just ask, I feel it's more important for me to say, you know what, I'm listening to you. I need to fidget right now so I can be present, but I'm with you and I'm hearing you. It's helping me to stay present. But then that starts a whole new conversation of at what point does my disability or my needs trump yours? Because what if my fidget makes it so that you can't pay attention to me and anything I'm saying in that moment? Then what? And I don't know what the answer is in that. I think it's something that has to be explored in different relationships, normalizing that, like sensory needs. I have a friend who came over to my place recently and was like, wow, I feel so comfortable in your space. And my friend was able to finally figure out, oh, because your lighting is dimmer. I didn't realize lights were important and that if they're too bright, it's harder for me to be in a space. And now like they're thinking about their space and how they can emulate that, so they're not just sitting in the dark all the time. So yeah, it's wild how much all of this touches. And now I just feel like I have this more complete picture of myself, because yeah, I would say in terms of identities, the most important intersection is really just leaning into being neuroqueer, because yeah, it impacts every aspect of my life. There's not a single part of my life that doesn't touch.
Yeah. So what kind of things do you do to manage your ADHD and autism?
I think that I read a statistic somewhere that, I don't know, we're 500% more likely to be entrepreneurs. And honestly, I think that's really great, because depending what industry we're in, it allows us to dictate our own hours. I think the traditional 9-to-5 is over. I think it's been over for some time, but places have been reluctant to let it go. Yeah, because I find that if I want to really dive into my creativity and I'm creating a new offering, for example, that people can hire me for, like a speaking engagement of some kind, it's easier for me to get creative in the evening. And I think part of that too is because I don't have people pinging me, right? I don't have people emailing me for stuff, like admin stuff, or friends usually texting me as much. So I'm able to just stay in my creativity zone. And I've also had to make adjustments. Like throughout the week, I have 2 to 3 meetings with friends that we do co-working together because body doubling has been everything. So we'd sit in a Zoom session and say, okay, hey, what are you working on today? Okay, I'm working on this. All right, see you in 3 hours, AKA we'll wrap up in 3 hours. And those sessions have been amazing because it's just allowed me to be productive. I couldn't tell you all the reasons as to why that is or all the science behind it, but my goodness, it's been a game changer. Yeah, I think it's just like taking time, like all of this. I think all of it's just taking the time to like really be with ourselves and think about what do I need? What do I need to be successful? And then to be able to advocate for ourselves. So one quick example of that, of a way that I do that as an entrepreneur too, when it comes to my clients is in my email signatures, I have a whole blurb about let's prioritize joy and being away from our computers and not get caught up in the hustle culture of needing to get back to each other within 24 hours or whatever, you know, unless something's more urgent, which again, like contracts or something, sure. Otherwise that, yeah, I'm not going to expect a timely response unless I ask for it explicitly again for some reason, but that there's just more flexibility. And I can't tell you how many people email me back and just love that because I'm giving both of us permission to not get caught up in the 24 to 48 hour reply. Like we can really just take our time with it.
For me, a timely response is, because I'm trying to get more guests on here because I'm trying to make this into a business, and we'll talk about that in a minute but my timely response is 72 hours. Like I try to get back to people as quickly as I can. Because if I don't do it right when I'm thinking about it, I tend to forget and get to it 6 months later. But I don't understand the people who, I understand it, but still, just because you don't respond within 24 hours, it doesn't necessarily mean like you don't care or anything. It just means you have other stuff to do. So 72 hours is a timely response in my opinion.
Yeah. And that's something I personally also strive for, just because also I don't like having a lot on my lists or on my plate to do. For example, I recently had a miscommunication with a friend. It's a newer relationship. This was the first time we had this happen. And I have learned again about myself, especially through my neurodivergence, I need a little bit more time to process. Because I want to make sure I really heard somebody and I really want to sit with like, how do I feel outside of any other influences and really just take the time to think about values, et cetera. Even checking in with someone, I think about all of the horrible things that have been going on. Sure, there's also plenty of joyful things and wonderful celebratory moments. But if we just think about some of the like anti-trans, anti-LGBTQ plus legislation that's been proposed, has passed, et cetera, just this year in the States, or even when you think about the UK, like, when we go to check in on friends, something that's been so helpful to me is if a friend is going to check in with me via text, for example, that they say something like, hey, I heard the news. I just want you to know I'm thinking about you. I'm here if you want to talk. And you don't even have to reply. Just wanted you to know that you're on my mind. Something like that just feels amazing. Because again, we're just like communicating our needs. We're communicating boundaries. We're also setting like expectations or a lack thereof in this case, and or the expectation rather that you may not get back to me and that's cool. I just wanted you to know this thing. And that's great. And it just feels a lot better, honestly, because it doesn't mean that something isn't important to me. It just means that maybe I need time to process, or I want to make sure I can, again, if it's really important, that I can really sit with it. And again, if it's a contract, that I got the details squared away so there's no silly errors. Or again, if it's a relationship that I'm just taking the time to really think about, okay, what happened in that interaction? What do I want to say about it? Am I answering all my friends' questions about what happened, et cetera? So yeah, I think taking that extra time to do that is going to be better. And honestly, I appreciate when people take the time to be more thoughtful versus a quick reply that, again, may be riddled with errors and where they maybe didn't even read my full email, which I try to keep those short too. But yeah.
Yeah. And for me, because of my TP, I need a cerebral palsy. I need an extra minute to process. Otherwise, I will say something that sounds okay in my head. And this happened to me, and I've been mortified every time. It sounds okay in my head, but it comes out of my mouth, and it's totally offensive. And I have to be like, I'm so sorry. That's not what it sounds like. But yeah, so it, you need that extra check-in to process. Otherwise, you're deep doo-doo.
Yeah, and that's, again, I'd rather have a few beats of silence. And again, if you had said something like, you know what, I'm just taking a moment to think about what you said because I want to be thoughtful in my reply, that's totally cool. Or asking something like, hey, I thought I heard you say this. Is that true? Or did you mean something else? This is how I heard it. And just, yeah, taking a few extra moments to check in on our relationships.
Yeah. And so you were saying earlier too about the administrative test. And as I mentioned earlier, I'm trying to turn this into a business. And my mother is a CFO. And I've been doing this podcast as like a hobby for like several years now. And she's, okay, if you want to turn this into a business, I'm going to need a business plan. And I hate stuff like business plan, all that. I just like being creative. I'm like, let me do a podcast. 3 hours. I know not 3 hours, but you know, right? I'll decide. But doing business plan, stuff like that, I'm like, I'd rather be watching paint dry.
That's fair. Yeah, there's just some tasks that come more naturally to us than others. And so, yeah, I love spending more time in the creativity. I do understand and realize the importance of admin stuff, but oh my gosh, even just taxes, forget it. Like it is the bane of my existence every year that they come around. And again, I know it's important and all of that. And I want to take the time to do it right, but gosh, it is a nightmare. And even outsourcing, it still means there's a lot I have to do to get my accountant prepared to navigate all of that. Yeah.
Yes. Luckily, my mom has TurboTax and made the CFO. So honestly, if this takes off, I'm just going to be like, I will pay you to my taxes with my TurboTax.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So you also have a podcast called Ally Shipper Shipper. Tell us about that.
Yeah. In all of the years that I've been doing LGBTQ plus community organizing or speaking and training, something that's come up time and time again is I think there's a lot of folks who are genuinely interested in practicing allyship, especially for the LGBTQ plus community. But especially with the rise of things like cancel culture, folks have gotten afraid and they then just don't do anything. They become bystanders, maybe, for example. And so what I've been wanting to do is just help equip people with the tools to know, number one, let's humanize this because we're all going to make mistakes. And I'm not saying then that we can't hold ourselves accountable. It's just that there are some ways that we can do that. So for example, like when you were talking about apologizing earlier, something I've been training people to do, especially if they make a mistake with like names or pronouns, is rather than like over apologizing, just taking a moment that if you caught the mistake yourself, to just restate what you were saying with the name and the pronouns you were supposed to be using, and then just keep going. And then it's great role modeling for other people. And then I'm not saying never apologize, but for example, when we then get corrected by someone, we can say thank you instead of I'm sorry, because again, in the example of someone like maybe using the wrong pronouns for me, it takes a lot of emotional burden off of me to have to be like, no, it's cool, no worries, which my people pleasing ways come through every now and then. I've been slowly shedding that, but they come back every now and then. Instead of me having to do more emotional labor as the person who was harmed in that instance, whether intentional or otherwise, which usually it's the otherwise and not intentional. It just helps me to be like, cool, you got it. Great, we can move on and don't have to make a big thing of it. But so the other challenge is that we're not a monolith. Any group you look at that is needing equity, equality, et cetera, like we're not all wanting to be treated the same in terms of the language we use to describe our experiences, et cetera. So that could easily get overwhelming. But what is important then is just to say, cool, let me have some quote unquote tools in my toolbox. I feel like the social worker's coming out again. Every episode, I am having a conversation with someone from the LGBTQ plus community, and we're talking about their story. Maybe we're talking also about different things that are happening right now, but each one ends in an allyship tip. And ideally, it would also honor my guest, whatever that tip is. And so what's cool about that is then you can say, cool, all right, my friend is having a really bad day. Here are some things I know that I can offer that would feel doable for me. Let me pose that to my friend, because another thing we can do is put more emotional labor on people to say, you know what, I see that you're hurting. How can I support you right now? And I get why we think that would be helpful. But if that person's like really struggling in that moment, number one, like I know I feel overwhelmed when someone asks me that, because then I'm going to be worried, am I asking too much, or can they even do the things that I would need? Or when I think it creates like an uncomfortable dynamic for everyone. So rather, if someone's, hey, you know what, you've had a bad day, I can send you a meal, I can listen to you vent if you need to do that, or I can also just take you outside and we can sit in nature for however long. Like something like that's easier for me to say yes or no to. And so, yeah, so that's what allyship as a verb offers, is it says, we're not a monolith, even if you look under any of the subgroupings of the LGBTQ plus community. So yeah, here are specific ways you can show up for people, and here's how you can go about that. Plus we like humanize the mistakes. There's been episodes where my guests and I talk about mistakes they've made and how they've bounced back from those, which I think is important. So yeah, that's what my podcast aims to do. And I will say it's just been a huge honor, because I'll be starting my third season in August of 2023. And to date, I've gotten 3 nominations for awards. And what's even more important is I'll have folks like therapists reach out and say how much they've been learning, especially when they're working with the LGBTQ plus community, and that they'll even share certain episodes with clients to listen to. So it just, it's a huge honor. And I love also knowing that I'm amplifying people's voices. So it's not just me being the only person saying this stuff. It's coming from all sorts of different people of all sorts of different backgrounds and identities, experiences, et cetera.
So this might be a little bit offensive, but if it is lighted out and nobody's watching the live stream on it, we would just be from this backup. But it was very enlightening for me to listen to the episode that I listened to prepare this here, one on LGBTQ summer camp, because I was a little worried about how are they going to make sure that people don't use the trans identity to get in and start doing all kinds of crazy stuff. And then the guest said, I cannot allow them to be physically intimate as an adult that looks at the children. And I was like, okay, that makes me feel a lot better about the camp, because I know that they're already looking out for that. So even stuff like that is helpful too.
Yeah, but I would say like making those kinds of assumptions, if we're only making those kinds of assumptions about camps that are for LGBTQ plus campers or trans campers, that's super problematic, because we should be worried about any youth under the age, especially under the age of consent, engaging in any sort of sex. So yeah, definitely something to think about. And that's also going to vary per state, per city, et cetera, as far as all of those rules. But what's problematic is when people make it about only the LGBTQ plus community or any of the subgroups and sexualize us, when that's not even the purpose of the camp. So like we were talking about in that episode, gosh, there's so many camps now, just even for LGBTQ plus youth or the different subgroupings like trans youth. So that's what I loved about what my guest was sharing, Rebecca Kling, because she was talking about how what she loves about the camp that she participates in as a leader is for trans youth. And it's not even about their transness. That's something they share in terms of an experience that they'll all experience and relate to differently, but they can just be kids. And that can just be like the one place they don't have to worry about their transness or explaining it to anyone or anything like that. Yeah.
Yeah, that was really cool. I love that episode.
Thanks.
So any plans for the podcast to do any more on neurodivergent stuff?
What I try to do is I always ask my guests, like we have a 30-minute conversation just to feel each other out and see if it's a good fit. And what's been important is that I always ask them, like, what do you feel moved to share? What do you want to talk about? Because it'd be really easy, especially for guests that are more well-known, like Coco Peru was on the second episode of the first season. She's a fairly well-known drag queen, especially in LA and New York. And yeah, it was just more important for me to know what she wanted to share, because I could easily come up with questions and stuff. But I think of it as like when folks are doing PR for like their movie or show that's coming out and they get asked the same questions all the time. I don't want to do that. So that's something that's super important to me, that we mutually agree to whatever we're going to be talking about. And also that they feel comfortable getting as vulnerable as they want to, because it definitely helps when folks are willing to be more vulnerable. But sometimes I have folks reaching out to me because they're representing someone who's an author who has, let's say, a gay or trans kid, and they're just trying to push their book. And I'm like, I always laugh that they think that they're going to be an exception on my podcast, because I'm very explicit every time with them. Like, you must be from the LGBTQ plus community. And I intentionally set that up from the get-go because I don't want it to be like the Brownie Points podcast. Like, if someone's going to share about them being an ally, then let it be from the person who is impacted by that. I don't need allies flexing on what they did or didn't do or anything. I just feel like that'd quickly spiral out of control. So,
yeah. But yeah. Spirals into the Inclusion Olympics.
Yeah. So there's that piece. However, I'm also aware that there are certain experiences that haven't been represented yet. So what, to your point, what will be different about the third season is I'm going to be taking a critical look at, okay, what kinds of folks have been on, what kinds of intersections, and who haven't we heard from yet? And I'm going to be asking folks more directly in the community, do you know anyone who's had this particular experience? Do you know of anyone who carries this particular identity as part of anything else that they also identify with? And I think that'll be really important. So yeah, will we end up talking about neurodivergence or being neuroqueer? Maybe, because honestly, there's a pretty big overlap in the communities. A lot of folks that are part of the LGBTQ plus community, I couldn't give you a number, but number of us, there's like a pretty big overlap in terms of being gender expansive in some way or queerness in some way. And I use queerness as more of a flexible umbrella for a host of different identities like bisexual, pansexual, etc. But yeah, so.
Yeah. Okay, is there anything else you'd like to add before we get off here?
Yeah, just like that if any of this resonated with anybody, especially the neuroqueer part, there are folks that are writing about it. I know that right now I'm in the middle of reading Unmasking Autism. And gosh, even before getting to the first chapter, just the opening, I'm already identifying with so much of it. So I think it's just like really...
I'm going to write that down on my phone right now.
Yeah, I just think it's really great that we're getting more and more diverse perspectives and voices out there in publishing more than ever before. And yeah, it's just been very healing. I know we talked about TikTok at the top, and I jokingly say it diagnosed me, but I think there's something to it. So it's really helpful to hear about other people's experiences. Goodness. I'd say something that's been hard about my particular experience is that I have tended to be the first person in my group of friends or people I know, my circles, to either come out as non-binary or queer or now neuroqueer. And it's like helped to pave the way for others. But, you know, it's also taken me being able to hear other people's experiences. So if we didn't have things like the internet connecting us, I don't know how much longer I would have been in the dark. But now it's, again, it's just, it's helped to gain a much clearer picture about who I am, how I show up, what I need. And yeah, it just makes it easier to advocate for myself. So I guess I just wanted to say that. And of course, happy to have anyone take a listen to Allyship as a Verb if they'd like to practice that. And I will say too that I thought that it would mostly be, let's say, middle-aged women who have 2.5 kids and are in the suburbs and maybe have an inclination to believe that one of their kids is gay or trans or something, and they want to figure out what to do about that. But, and I do have those listeners, but far and away, I also have queer and trans people listening. And that's a huge compliment, because something that I've always wrestled with is that even within the LGBTQ plus community, we don't agree on everything. And again, we're not all honored by the same things. It's just helpful that we can learn how to even begin to support and show up for each other in the other letters. I think that's really important, and to like hold those experiences in our hearts and our minds. So yeah, those are my rambles for today, but yeah, thank you for listening to all of them.
You're welcome. And you were saying about your surprise that your listener demographic, I use a thing called Anchor to upload my podcast. I don't know.
Me too.
So anyway, I was looking at the Anchor demographic, and what Anchor is, for those of you who don't know, is a website that you upload your podcast to, and then it puts it on to the podcast platforms where you listen for you. So you don't have to submit it manually. Submitting it manually is a pain in the butt. And imagine my surprise when I looked at the Anchor demographic, because it tells you like what your demographics are as for listeners. And the majority of people were like 60 plus. And I'm like, are you kidding? That's awesome, because I'm like, there is no way. We're not in your face. At least I don't think we are. We don't do politics. We don't do any of that. So anybody can listen and feel comfortable, I hope. But at least that's the goal. But honestly, I thought, there's no way that the oldest community, besides my grandmother, is going to connect with this. But they have been. I'm pleasantly surprised by that.
And to your point, I think that disability has been mislabeled as like an old person problem. And while for some folks they may become disabled in their older ages, it can impact any of us at any point. We can either come out of the womb and be disabled, or an event could happen to us at some point in our lives. It could be age. I know one of the phrases that we tend to see online a lot with the disability community is it's a matter of when, not if, we'll be disabled, which is more reason why it's important for us to have that be foundational in anything we do. Certainly as an LGBTQ plus community organizer, I had to think, especially like in-person events or even now online, I have to think about people having ASL interpretation if they need that, or Spanish translation if we need it, or just all these different things. It's not even just whether or not wheelchair users can physically get into a building. I was listening to one of your previous episodes, and I know you were talking about stairs, and I don't know where I read this or how I heard about this, but stairs are accessibility. We think of ramps being accessible, but so are stairs. That's why they were created. It's a way of helping us to more accessibly get to somewhere. So I think if we're able to normalize that more and more, we'll realize those are all around us and why it shouldn't be a big deal and why it should be super foundational in anything that we do. And thinking about, you know, who's in a space or not, and if they're not there, then why? And if we're making decisions on behalf of communities, that they better also be included in those conversations, because if we're making decisions on behalf of people without their input, then, I mean, there's going to be who knows what harm and unintended consequences that can happen with that. So yeah, like accessibility in all of the ways is so important, not just like thinking of wheelchair users or just strictly mobility, but in all sorts of ways.
And I'll add, like, even wheelchair accessibility is more than just can you get into the building.
It's, yeah.
Can you use the bathroom? Is the bathroom accessible? Yeah. Is there like tables you can get up to? Do they have, if you need to use the computer for a job, or are they going to put any adaptive equipment somebody might need on a computer? It's way more than just getting into the building.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I so enjoyed this conversation. Anything you need from me, you're more than welcome. You're welcome to come back anytime.
Well, thank you.
I love having you. Thank you for being here. And we will see you guys next episode. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us. We hope you enjoyed the show. Remember to follow the show and our guests on social media, and subscribe to the show on YouTube or in your favorite podcast app using the links in the show notes. If you're listening on the podcast app, please remember to rate and review us. See you.